Caroline, Willie, D-Base, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And joining us now is TD Teron Davenport. TD, always love chatting with you. TD, looking at the current wide receiver situation with the Tennessee Titans, which do you think is more likely? The Titans go into this season with the receiving core that they have currently constructed, Treylon Burks, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, Chris Moore, or that the Titans go out and make a big move for a new receiver, a veteran receiver, potentially DeAndre Hopkins or another receiver that could potentially be on the market from now until the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I don't think they go out and make a big move. There could be a lower scale addition, but what you see is probably what you're going to be dealing with throughout the year. And obviously it leaves a lot for a lot of fans to critique and be upset about. And we'll just have to see how it rolls out. But I don't see them making a big deal.
And who do you predict to be the starting quarterback week one?
I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't be Tannehill. I think when you look at Will Levis, he's a guy that you have to continue to develop. Same thing with Malik Willis. It's going to be Tannehill. That's what I would predict.
Now, with that being said, TD, do you think, because we discussed earlier about, you know, Ryan Tannehill and potential trades. One question for you. First question is, if Ryan Tannehill – if it's close, say the quarterback room, do you think that the Titans are more inclined to trade away Ryan Tannehill before the season, or do you think it's one of those deals where they keep him around, and if something happens during the season, then they can make a trade, which to me I think is very highly unlikely. Because I think if they're going to make a trade for Ryan Tannehill, they're going to do it at the beginning of the season or before the season kicks off rather than, you know, once the season has gone. But do you think if it's close, if Will Levis is showing that he's picking up the offense, that he has the maturity, that he's showing the leadership, do you think there's a high possibility that they push the button on a Will Levis led team now rather than later?
I don't think as long as Tannehill is healthy and able to play, I don't think they're going to pay him $36 million to not be there. And then also even, you know, swallow that $18 if they trade him. Now, obviously that could change. You look at what happened in 2016. Right before the season, you had Teddy Bridgewater go down with that terrible injury, and the Eagles flipped Sam Bradford for a first-round pick. Now, if a team would give a first or even a second-round pick for Tannehill, I think he would be gone. I think that would be the case, but I don't see a team doing that unless they are stuck in some type of situation like that before. So all that being said, even if it's close, I think Tannehill will be the guy, at least for this upcoming year. And that being said, I mean, you know, both Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel said it will be a competition and the guys will kind of sort out where they end up. Still, they spoke to Tannehill and told him where he stood. So I would highly doubt that they would go back on that just on the strength of you know, having a consistent message to him, which also extends to the rest of the locker room. I think that's something you have to consider.
Am I making too much of a big deal out of this or not? Tell me, TD. When asked during – and you were there during the, you know, the media session with the players last week, and the question was asked about Ryan Tannehill, you know, what did you think about them drafting Will Levis in the second round but not drafting a wide receiver and this and that? And his response was basically, I thought they would draft one earlier, but they didn't, but they, you know, drafted player of need. Should I think too much about that or not? Because to me, I look at it as, like, he's really disappointed as a quarterback they didn't get a wide receiver earlier rather than waiting waiting to the seventh round to go out and get a wide receiver, because he knows exactly what he needs to succeed.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because I also remember him saying that, hey, you know, he doesn't make the decisions and he's just going to go out and try to get better each day. That's a tough call, whether or not that's a big deal being made about it, because, I mean, he was just speaking his mind, and it's very obvious that the be great around Tannehill thing has not been adhered to since, you know, A.J. Brown being traded, et cetera, et cetera. So I could see there being disappointment there, but I don't think that he was truly – because he's always one that, like, he toes the line. Like, he's not going to typically have a controversial statement. There are some things, obviously, that we've made a bigger deal out of, but I don't think that this was the case with this one.
Teron Davenport is with us. Teron, first of all, let's hope this day off helps our Mets regroup. Man, they are really struggling right now. It's driving me crazy. But that aside, we'll get together later and have our therapy session, okay, Teron?
Yeah, they're doing terribly.
They're not doing well. What was your reaction when you saw the Taylor Lewan lawsuit? I guess we've known this was coming for a while, but James Andrews, you know, such a reputable guy, like state-of-the-art kind of guy in baseball and in football. I was really surprised when I saw that it was him.
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw it was him as well. I guess nobody's perfect, right? And I mean, whatever happened with that, obviously, Lewan's career took a different turn after the injury. And, you know, as a result of that, he's not here with the team anymore. I was just surprised, you know, like you said, that it was that surgeon, that doctor, because he's so renowned and has worked with so many players and done an excellent job with them.
Teron, you've seen a lot of seasons in this league, a lot of unexpected teams do well. Teams that are supposed to be really good on May the 8th end up having a disastrous kind of season. We're trying to look at the way the Titans team is constructed right now. Let's say things fall right. If you argue that last year things just didn't fall right, right? They just had a rash of injuries, a lot of things that derailed an otherwise solid season that was in the making. What would be a solid season for this team?
Yeah, I think to contend for the AFC South title. I think, you know, a 9-8 type of record would be really solid for them. You would like to see them do better, just given that it's probably going to be the last hurrah for Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. But I think 9-8 is probably, if I had to make a prediction, I would say 9-8, 10-7 would be a solid season for them.
So if that's – and I tend to agree. I think 10 would be sort of the ceiling. 9, 10, very realistic. But you could go under that for a couple games. But with that in mind, how much are you eyeing this season and how much are you keeping an eye on what you have to do beyond the season, knowing the situation you have contractually with Byard, Tannehill, Henry, your quarterback situation, your draft for next year? What's the balance in your mind?
Well, I think knowing how much money they're going to have available free agent-wise and just salary cap overall, Byard is not one that I would be thinking about. But I do think, you know, with Tannehill and Henry having avoidable years and their contracts essentially being done, you're going to have to, you know, look towards replacing those guys. And I think that's a part of this surprise draft that they had this year as far as moving up to get Levis and taking Tajay Spears. I think that was done with those intentions in mind. But you also have to look at the draft capital that they have. It's not too good. I mean, you're looking at, what, a first, a second, a fourth, and 2 sevenths. So you're not in really good shape there. The guys that you know, traded the fifth and sixth round picks for in Dennis Daly and Ugo Amadi, minimal contribution and not even on the roster anymore. So I think with this, the biggest thing would be trying to figure out ways to increase that draft capital, because also you look at the whole process of getting comp picks. You know, that's probably not going to be a really good option for them either. They didn't get any this year, you know, and next year is probably going to be the same.
TD is with us, Teron Davenport. TD, is there anything in particular that makes you feel more confident that Kevin Byard will be a Tennessee Titan this season, maybe more so than Derrick Henry or Ryan Tannehill?
No, I mean, not necessarily anything as far as like what's been said or anything like that, I think, you know, all three of them are still playing at a very good level. A very good clip here, you know, obviously with Henry getting back to the multiple, 200-yard rushing games and 1,500 yards in the season. But I don't see anything in particular other than the fact that these other guys have voidable years on their contract and it's minimal cost to move on.
And speaking of Tannehill, how did you step away from his press conference last week? What was your biggest takeaway from Tannehill's meeting with the media last week?
Yeah, biggest takeaway, just the way he handled being in that situation again. Like, I couldn't imagine my future replacement being selected and added to the group 2 years in a row. And just to see the focus that he still had on, look, just going out and winning games, that being his job and his objective. And then even, you know, he could have put the team under the bus, right, for not drafting a receiver earlier. But, you know, he kind of touched on it, but he didn't, in my opinion, throw them under the bus. So just the maturity, the respect that he maintained for the organization, and just the way he was. I mean, I was impressed with that part of it.
I really do have to give Ryan Tannehill credit. I felt like he got up there after the Titans drafted his heir apparent, after the Titans didn't address the receiver position until the seventh round, and considering all of the headlines that were made of his post-draft press conference last year after the Titans drafted a quarterback, I really did get a sense that Ryan Tannehill went up there with a good bit of confidence, all things considered.
Absolutely, a good bit of confidence. That's one thing he always shows, is the confidence and the professionalism. So you got to respect that with him. I think he does an excellent job of you know, maintaining his composure throughout all situations. And that's something that a lot of his teammates and the coaches, they commend him for.
TD, Teron Davenport, appreciate you as always. We will chat with you soon. Thanks, TD.
All right, for sure. Appreciate you. Take care.
Yep.
Awesome. Thanks, TD. We'll chat soon. Coming up next, one of the biggest names in basketball, in sports, has made a pretty big decision. And we'll give our thoughts on that coming up next. Caroline Relay D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Join 102.5 and 106.3 The Game this Friday for the grand opening of Dunkin' Donuts in Cane Ridge, located at 191 Burkitt Commons Avenue. Enjoy free coffee and other fun giveaways with us as we will be on site from 8 to 10 a.m. And it's a Monday. We all need something to get us through the week. So be the first person to answer Willie Donick's trivia question correctly, and you will win a pair of tickets to see John Fogerty at First Bank Amphitheater on July 25th. Willie, take it away.
All right, we're talking lotteries today because, and not like just playing the lottery, but we're talking about sports lotteries, some famous ones. The Predators, I don't know what the percentage is exactly of their hopes of moving up to number 15. 0.5? 0.5. Okay, it's not zero.
Saying there's a chance.
You got a chance. But here's today's question. Okay, it does happen, right? It does happen. 2008, as Marv Albert would say, the Chicago Bulls, they had a 1.7% chance of winning the lottery. 1.7. But they won. Who did they take with the first pick in 2008? 615-737-1025. A 1.7% chance. The Bulls won it. They picked up this player in the 2008 first pick in the draft. 615-737-1025.
And you will win. Be the first person to answer that trivia question correctly. You'll win a pair of tickets to see John Fogerty of First Bank Amphitheater on July 25th. Good luck with that. And hey, all you need is just a slim fraction of a percentage. All you need is a chance. Anything can happen. But I want to get into this because there was some big sports news over the weekend that one of the most highly touted high school athletes officially made their decision, and that's Bronny James. Bronny James, LeBron James' son, of course, officially committed to play college basketball at USC over the weekend. And of course, this isn't, you know, along the lines as his dad's the decision whenever LeBron James decided to go from Cleveland to Miami. You know, it's not going to be the biggest news surrounding sports, but I do think it's very interesting. to see how recruitment is going to change in the NIL era. Bronny James is worth more than any other college athlete in the country, and he isn't even in college yet. Bronny James is worth just shy of $6 million in NIL money, not to mention how much his entire family is worth. But I think that that adds such an interesting element, not just to his recruitment, but also the way that his coaches are going to have to approach his usage, to approach his, you know, his PR throughout the entirety of his college career. And honestly, I do not envy any coach that has that job, not just for Bronny James, but for college athlete management moving forward. It's tough.
I thought it was, when I saw the story, I guess I had not done detailed homework on Bronny James, the player. Apparently, he is just a great kid, by all accounts. Team player, team first, you know, has great makeup about him. A guy that you would want to have on your team. Great teammate. That's the first thing if you're the coach. Here's where, though, I started reading up. Pretty interesting. Like, because you would assume that any team in the country would want a guy like that. LeBron's son, yeah. But there were some coaches that said, I'm not sure I want all of that attention because of the following, right? He is not a hands-down one and done. He's only 6'3". He's a combo guard, which means he's not a pure point guard. So he's not a creator, a jet up and down the court. He's a good shooter, but at 6'3", if you project to the NBA and even on some high-level college, you better be really good if you're going to play the two-guard at 6'3". So he is more of a four-star recruit by most people's accounts. And I looked at a number of different ones. And not the hands-down five-star kind of guys. But he's got a five-star profile, right? He's got millions of followers on Instagram. He's got a shoe deal from Nike. He's got a Beats deal already. So he's coming in. So it's like, if you're the coach, like, you have to play him, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be tough to sit there and say, well, Bronny's not quite ready to play. I'm going to develop him slow. Like, I'm not sure that's an option, right? You got to have him in there. And it's going to be a story one way or the other how he's doing. If he's not doing well,
it's going to be a story.
It's going to be a story. If he's doing well, obviously it's going to be a story. Mm-hmm. So there are some coaches that were like, I'm not sure that's exactly what I would sign up for.
Yeah, it's difficult. And I read an SI column about him, and the four schools that were mentioned was Oregon, Memphis, SC, and obviously Ohio State, being that his dad was born and raised in Akron. So there were four teams that, you know, and I'm sure there were other teams, but you're talking about four major colleges. Those four
pretty much needed to be a Nike school.
Exactly.
Right?
Absolutely. So it's a unique position for a head coach to be in when you have the son of arguably the greatest basketball player ever coming to your university. How then do you handle that situation and not make it different from what the other guys are going through? Because, you know, obviously he's going to come in. He may not be the best player in that recruiting class, but he has the biggest name.
Right. And that is supposedly the case with USC. They've got a lot of people coming in. They've got some talented guys. And he may, if you just go by the talent, he's not guaranteed to start.
But he has the biggest name. So I think a lot of this, you know, falls on allowing – you know, Bronny to be a student athlete or an athletic student, as I call them, because that's what they really are. You know, you come in here, you got a scholarship to play a sport. That's your number one thing, and everything else falls second. I was watching LeBron. He was doing an interview on that this same topic about his son, and he said, listen, you're getting a great human. Like, just a great kid. You're getting a great kid. But then he said, he's coming there to play basketball, though. Don't get that wrong. He's coming there to play basketball.
He's got the dream. He wants to play in the NBA.
So when he says that, it's almost like you're twisting the arm a little bit of the head coach and everybody else, like, he's coming there to play basketball. Nothing else. Like, so this is why we chose for him to come to USC. Close to home. I can see him. Mom can see him. Brothers and sisters can see him. And then he can go to this, you know, to the arena and watch me play at night. But this is where I think they're going to have to allow, they're going to have to step away. Like, you're going to have to step away because you don't want to be in a position, and I've seen this appearance in high schools, hell, let alone college, where you start to overstep your boundaries. And listen, I've seen it happen with people's voices that are not as big as LeBron's voice or his platform. So if LeBron steps in, he's going to he might just get what he wants, whatever he says. I want my son playing 12 minutes a game. He's going to be playing 12 minutes a game if he's coming to your university. If I want him playing more, then I'm going to suggest that he plays more. And more than likely, what's going to happen? If he's showing that he's progressing, he's going to play more. This is where I think the parent has to sort of step out of the way, allow the player to immerse himself with the group, and allow him to get better and let his play dictate how much he plays. Let his talent dictate that. Because the last thing you want to do is push for this kid to be out there and everybody knows he's not ready. And he gets out there and he shows that he's not ready, but you're continually throwing him out there because of who his dad is.
I went to a game at USC a couple years ago. Vanderbilt with Darius Garland, unfortunately, before he got hurt. I mean, in USC with Andy Enfield, the coach.
But Darius Garland was a five-star kid.
Oh, yeah. But I just say this. The arena was about half full. There was probably like five NBA guys in there. USC had some dudes, right? Vanderbilt with Darius Garland and Aaron Nesmith. Yeah. I mean, they had a couple NBA guys in their lineup, too. About half of the building was empty. I don't think that's going to be the case with Bryant.
It's not.
Right? It's going to be a big spotlight play. So I really hope that for his sake, that he could just be, like you said, be a college student to a point. But this is something to watch, right? There's going to be a lot of weight with the shoe contract and everything like that in the glare. I just hope that the expectations are tempered some and they handle that. And just let him,
allow him to grow in the game.
Be himself.
I would love to see him play with LeBron, but I don't, the way it's looking now, I think I've seen enough of him play. Whether it be in a McDonald's All-Star game, night games, or they would show him, you know, when he was in high school, they would televise some of his games if they're playing against bigger schools. Allow this kid just to go out and just
be the best person he can be.
Be the best player he can be. And if it turns out to be an NBA prospect, I would love to see him play with LeBron. I would love to see that. Man, as a father, you know, it's like, Willie, I know you got drafted. You got drafted. I ain't going to say where you got drafted. But if you and Aaron had Mahoney when y'all were younger, you know, younger, and sort of he got to that way, you know, that point where, wow, I can play with my dad. You would have loved that. Like, I want to play with my son.
Of course.
You know, so I would love to watch, you know, LeBron and Bronny out there on the same. If they're playing together or playing against one another, I would love to see that as a dad.
Yeah, you want to see him do the best he can possibly do. But what I hope is he doesn't get chewed up by the spotlight and exploited and things like that and overhyped. Yeah, that you would hate to see that because there have been players that have been overhyped.
Yeah.
That puts, I think, USC in a really difficult position because, of course, with LeBron James hype, comes LeBron James' expectations. And that's not fair. You know, Bronny James is not his dad. He is not LeBron James. But with all of the hype and all of the money, it's a difficult thing for this team to manage, not just with Bronny James individually, but also with the rest of the team. There's going to be a whole lot of talk, a whole lot of hype about Bronny James and not about some of the other players. Are they equipped to handle that? But I do have to say, I do think it is an advantage to Bronny James that being in the spotlight is nothing new for him. I mean, all of his high school games are star-studded over at Sierra Canyon. He's been in the limelight his entire life. He's had money his entire life. So at least this isn't something new to him. Willie Donick, give Mahoney our best of luck, keeping our fingers crossed for Mahoney and USN.
Okay, fingers crossed. Thank you, guys. We'll hope for the best. We'll hope for the best.
Absolutely.
Root him on. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
All right, see you tomorrow, Willie. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. While we're on the topic of basketball, yet another controversial call over the weekend from the NBA playoffs. We'll give our thoughts on that. Caroline, Willie DeMace, 1025, 1063, the game.
Hey, the playoff intensity spilling over into the expensive seats. Matt Ishbia, the owner of the Suns, does not want to give away that loose ball, and the Joker doesn't appreciate it.
No, it's not his ball, actually.
One of those, rare instances where a two-time MVP gets a technical for putting a forearm onto the owner of the other team.
I don't understand why you got a technical.
For putting a forearm on the guy and putting him back in the seat.
I would guarantee that Joker did not know he first he was an owner.
I agree with you. I'm just saying you're asking why. I'm telling you why.
So you agree, Kenny?
I agree.
He shouldn't have got a technical.
If it was any other fan in the world, they wouldn't have gave him a technical.
First of all, let me ask you a question, Ernie. If there had been a regular fan, he'd have got tossed.
The other guy got tossed.
I know, because he hit Joker.
He touched him. He didn't hit
him. Yeah, okay. But I'm saying, though, if another fan wouldn't let the ball go, he would have got tossed.
Would have got tossed. Okay. Yeah. But you're not throwing me out of my building. I just paid $6
Exactly.
No way.
By the way, this is the American League halftime report.
A lot of stuff come with that million, except the ball, though.
Let me just say, that TNT crew, I think, might be my favorite panel of analysts ever, of any sport ever. I love that squad with Shaq and Charles Barkley and the whole TNT crew.
I'm telling you, they are the best. I mean, I don't think there's another crew that does, like, not only, it's not even about the job they do. They do a good job. I mean, above a good job. I mean, hell, they won Emmys for their show. But just the chemistry and, you know, the back and forth banter between, you know, Shaq and Charles and then Kenny. And then, you know, it's just, it's you haven't seen it on television ever. And I know people are trying to put together their own panels to sort of get that chemistry. But I don't think you ever be able to duplicate what they're doing. Over at TNT with that cast of guys. I mean, it's just one minute they make you mad, the next minute they have you dying, crying, laughing, but they always give good analysis of what's going on during the game. So kudos to them. You can't ask for a better four guys to talk about sports.
Totally. I mean, it is so entertaining and it is so natural. I love it. But another thing that was very entertaining last night was the Nuggets-Suns game, Sunday night, game 4. It was a wild game. Devin Booker goes off. KD goes off. Jokic goes off. I mean, it was offensive fireworks in game 4 between the Suns and the Nuggets. But that is not the number one storyline that has come out of that game. So the number one storyline is Nikola Jokic and the technical foul that he drew last night after he kind of shoved the Suns owner. He's over at the side of the court. Ball goes out of bounds. Nikola Jokic tries to pick the ball up. The Suns owner, who is sitting courtside, picks up the ball. Jokic kind of shoves him to the side. Jokic draws a technical foul for that. And the biggest controversy is, did he really deserve a technical for what he did? D-Base, what do you think? I have thoughts. I want to hear your thoughts.
For one, Nikola Jokic, he didn't deserve a foul. I mean, a technical on that one. I know you own the building. Mm-hmm. You're the owner. I get it. But you don't, in the middle of a basketball game, grab the basketball and cuff it, you know, as if you're about to get ready to, you know, do a Billy Sims or a Barry Sanders spin and take it to the house. You had that basketball cuff like you didn't want nobody to take it, like you was getting ready for the dunk contest, old school style. No, you knew exactly what you were doing, and Jokic is trying to get the ball. Like, dude, give me the ball. He don't care if that's the owner. He probably didn't know it was the owner. It's just some fool in the stands in the front row deciding to insert themselves into the game. And as for the push, it really wasn't that bad. That guy
flopped.
Exactly. I mean, listen, that flop was better than Vlade Divac. Matter of fact, he needed to go on the soccer field and teach them how to flop even better, because that flop was a good one. Jokic didn't push him that hard for him to fly across two other people and act as if there's something wrong. Listen, you insert yourself in a basketball game for a reason, then, hey, what happens to you happens to you. You know good and well you shouldn't have grabbed that basketball. I don't care if you do own the team and the arena which your team is playing in. So I don't think Jokic deserved the tech. Just like Ernie and him said, if that just been a regular fan, they would have been kicked out of the building. I understand. Mm-hmm. Well, can you kick him out of his building? I don't know if you could do that. You could probably tell
him, exactly.
You might want to go tell him to sit up in a press box, up in his suite. But, you know, I don't think the NBA is going to do anything further. They might, you know, I would fine the owner. You gave Jokic a tech, I will fine the owner for inserting himself into the basketball game. Listen, that space that they played in is protected space. And you do not need to insert yourself into their space. I don't care if you are the owner, because you know how tempers tend to flare up or how hard these guys are playing, and it takes the smallest thing for something to happen.
I 110% agree with you. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the owner. I don't care if you are the newly crowned king of England. And I don't care if you're just some regular person off the street that's sitting in those seats. Once you insert yourself in that situation, you are subject to whatever the players may do. I mean, if Jokic just fell over on him, would that be a technical foul? I don't care if it was the owner. If it was any other person, that person would be seeing the other side of the discipline, not the player. And I don't expect every single player in the NBA, to recognize every other NBA owner and say, oh, let me not touch this person because this person owns the team. That's not Nikola Jokic's job, is to play nice with the owner when the owner took the ball off the sideline of the court. I mean, that owner knows better than anybody what is and is not acceptable behavior in the middle of the game, especially a playoff game that was as heated and as competitive as the game was last night. So I don't think that he deserved a technical foul, and I sure as heck do not think that he would deserve any further punishment, a suspension, or a fine for what he did. Because if it was anybody else, we would not be having this conversation.
No, I don't think we will. I think the league will fine the owner, because if you gave Jokic a tech, then you need to be fining the owner as well. And again, these players don't, outside of Mark Cuban and, I don't know, Jeannie Buss, how many other owners would you know if they were sitting on the sideline? You would just know, oh, that's the owner. Beside those two people, I don't think you would realize who an owner was, you know?
Especially in the heat of a game?
Exactly. Now, if that was Mark Cuban, they would have known it was Mark Cuban. But I don't think Mark Cuban would have done something like that. If that was Jeannie Buss, I'm sure they would have known Jeannie Buss. But Jeannie wouldn't have done anything like that. And Jokic wouldn't have slightly elbowed her either. But, yeah, situation like that, it was a highly contested game. Really good game. The Suns end up winning that game. But you don't insert yourself, in a ball game. And maybe he doesn't know the owner etiquette, you know, because he just bought the team not too long ago, or part of a group that bought the team. I don't know which one it is, if he's the majority owner or part owner. But you don't insert yourself into a game like that. What Adam Silver needs to do is welcome him to the NBA and fine him a stiff one, a stiff fine, so he doesn't do it again.
Welcome to the NBA. Give me $500,000.
Exactly.
He also took to Twitter. Matt Ishbia, the owner of the Phoenix Suns, said, great win for the Suns last night, an amazing series so far. That should be and is the only story. Suspending or fining anyone over last night's incident would not be right. I have a lot of respect for Jokic and don't want to see anything like that. Excited for Game 5. Go Suns. Good for him. I'm glad he put that out there. The NBA does not need to take any further action. The owner himself, who's the quote-unquote victim, I guess, in this situation, is saying it's not a big deal. It's fine. It's over with. Let's move on from it.
And that's why Adam Silver needs to fine him now.
Exactly. Turn around on him. You just got played. You just played yourself, Matt Ishbia. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll wrap up with your thoughts coming up next. Caroline, Willie DeMace, a big announcement coming with station programming tonight at 5 o'clock, 1025, 1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Remember, big programming announcement at 5 o'clock on 1025 and 1063, The Game, so make sure to tune in for that. Very, very excited about some upcoming announcements that are coming down the pipe. DeMace, unless you have a thought, we have some texters in the text line with a question for you.
Let's go to the text line.
Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. DeMace, one texter texted in and said, I want to know what DeMace would think about this current wide receiver core. If he was playing for the Titans right now, what would he think about this receiver core?
Oh, boy. Man, I would think, hey, listen, we need to get better. We need to find a way to get better. We need to work harder. You know, where you're at now doesn't necessarily mean that's where you're going to be. You know, as camp started to roll around. So do everything possible to make sure that you are doing the necessary things, that you're ready. And I would play on the, hey, listen, they think we're horrible. They think this group of receivers is horrible. Let's prove them wrong. You know, that's how I would approach it, like the chip on your shoulder type deal. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go out there and earn respect. Let's go out there and earn it. Because right now, they're pointing at us as the worst receiving core in the league. You know how bad you got to be the worst to be the worst in the league? You got to be damn bad. Yeah. You got to be bad. So I would play on that. I would play on that. And just, you know, listen, your motivation should be self-motivation in a sense too, that you need to find something that you need to work at or a few things that you need to work at and work on it as if your life depending on it, in a sense. So I would take all of that, sort of combine it in one, and be honest with the guys, you know. And listen, if I feel we need to get better, I would say we need to get better. If I feel that we're almost there, I tell them that too. If I feel we are, you know, making strides, I tell them that too. But I would be strictly and unapologetically honest with them.
And I struggle with this a little bit because let's say – let's put ourselves in Treylon Burks' shoes. You know, he's the receiver that needs to step up, that needs to be that wide receiver one that the Tennessee Titans traded away A.J. Brown and drafted him to be. If I'm Treylon Burks, I could look at it one of two ways. I could look at it one way and say, look, I don't care what people are saying about this unit. I don't care what they're saying about me. I can't consume myself with some of the thoughts on the outside. I can't worry about the decisions that the general manager is making to not bring in a little bit more help. I just need to focus on what I'm doing. I need to focus on staying healthy and be the best receiver that I can be. I'm going to focus on being a leader, on taking the next step forward in year two. But also, he could look at it like, man, I'm not getting any help. You know, I'm going to be getting double teamed every single week. It's going to be difficult for me to take that next step forward if I don't have at least a little bit of support around me in this wide receiver room. So I wouldn't be surprised if he thinks about it in both ways, really.
Yeah, he's going to have to. And there's going to be sort of this pressure on him. But, you know, I would say to him, listen, pressure – you feel the pressure only when you think in your mind you're not prepared for the task at hand. That's when you feel the pressure, when you feel there's some doubt in your mind that maybe I'm not capable of doing what they're asking me to do. That's pressure. But if you are secure in what you're doing and you have the confidence and you've worked your ass off to be in this point at this point, there's no pressure because you know you're made for this. You're built for this. Pressure only comes when there's a doubt in your head, like, maybe I'm not up to this. Maybe I'm not good enough. That's when the pressure starts. But if you know that you've worked your tail off of this, that you've done all that you could as a player to make sure you're ready for the season, pressure? Pressure? There's no pressure. This is what I do. Like, there was no pressure for me when I went out there. This is what I do. Even when I got my first start, it wasn't pressure because I know what I had worked toward. I know the time that I put in. I know the dedication. I was just waiting on the opportunity. And when it came, there was no pressure because the moment wasn't bigger than me. I had already prepared for it. And that's what Treylon Burks, he has to walk in with that mentality. Like, this is not pressure to me. This is part of my job. I prepare for this. I know what it takes. And I'm the leader of this room. So there's no pressure.
There's high expectations, mm-hmm. absolutely, for Treylon Burks. But that's what comes with being a first-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. I know that Treylon Burks didn't ask the Tennessee Titans to trade away A.J. Brown. He didn't ask to be the heir apparent to that wide receiver one position. But that's the situation that he's in. So, yeah, it's high expectations. But that's what comes with the privilege of being a first-round draft pick. And that's what this team needs him to be, whether it's big expectations or not. That's what he needs to be. There's another texter in the text line saying, you know, why aren't we looking more into the UDFAs as part of this wide receiver unit? Mm-hmm. Look, the day that we start looking at undrafted free agents, and no disrespect to them whatsoever, the day that we start looking at some of those players as being the savior for any position group, I think is a very, very dark day in the history of football. If any of these undrafted free agents turn out to be something great, then great. But I'm not going to put my money on it. I'm not going to make that the expectation.
Exactly. You can bring them in hopes that they contribute to the roster. And then one out of the three or four that you bring in, one may turn out to be a gem. That's great. But you can't build your roster depending on undrafted free agents.
That is going to do it for us today. NHL draft lottery tonight at 7. Station programming announcement tonight at 5. Stillman and Company is up next.
Be love and love on somebody. Peace.